8:18 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Recently, a suicide prevention coalition was formed in Summit County. In the studio with details, I have Jerry Essen with the Summit County Health Department, Kathy Day with Valley Behavioral, and Sam Walsh, the prevention counselor at Park City High School. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jerry, let's start with you, and maybe you can give us just a little bit of background on the coalition. It was formed, I think, just earlier this year?
Well, actually, we started this last winter. When it started, and we've been looking at it here for a few years. It's been on the governor's radar for about 2-3 years. When he saw some of the rates, he was really concerned, and so he went to our partners at the state health department. They're in the violence and injury prevention program, and said, we need to do something. We need to start. So they came to us as a local health department and asked us to be involved, and to be really honest with you, we were shocked. Because this is not part of our normal education, and we were a little hesitant. And the reason I say this is I think this is kind of common for most individuals, but as we started looking into it and went through a very simple course, we found that this is something very important and it's something we can all be involved in, and that's the prevention of a suicide.
Yeah, so you were shocked by the request? Or
We were, because our first thought was, we're not counselors, we're not social workers, we're educators. And as I started looking at it, I thought, no, wait a minute. This is exactly what we do, is we educate the public on disease prevention, on preventing injuries, and suicide is a health issue.
Mm-hmm. So the three of you and more then formed this coalition?
Or? We did. We received a small grant, enough to get a few materials, and I called Kathy and said, hey, will you help me start this coalition? And she says, sure. And so we just started calling community members, and we've had an unbelievable response. And what we've found from this is that we've been able to identify what's going on in the community as well as gaps. And from this, we're starting to reach out and start programs that are needed here in Summit County.
So what does the coalition do? I mean, you provide the education functions? I mean, do you have regular meetings?
We do. We meet. Right now, we've been meeting monthly. And then we formed into groups to see, like I said, what's going on in the community and how we can start getting the message out to the average individual, because this is where the message needs to go. This is what we all need to do. I think there's that barrier there of I don't know how to prevent or to educate on suicide. And so that's what we're trying to do, is just to break down those walls and help people understand this is a preventable condition. And we can all do something about it.
Yeah. So I haven't seen any of that education. I mean, how are you getting that message out? I mean, you're certainly here today, but.
Well, and that's probably part of the reason we're here today, is so we can get that message out a little further. This has actually been, and Sam will have to correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a mandate for the schools. They do education programs. And I think maybe there's some barriers that people aren't coming. And I think it's just that, maybe that fear or lack of education or understanding what I can do.
You know, I don't recall where I read, but it seems like I did read somewhere at one point that the number one cause, or maybe the second number cause of death for young men, is suicide. Do you have any numbers on that here in Summit County?
Do you know what? In the county, we don't really focus so much on the numbers, because, you know, with suicide, it is something that is so, everyone is a tragedy. But we do look at what's the more important is it's the number one preventable cause of death. And that's kind of what we're trying to get that message out, is that it is preventable. It is something we can do. We are seeing some increases, and even one increase is a lot.
Let's talk about that increase. Kathy, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, what is it that you're seeing in the community? What's causing it? Is it depression? Is it?
Well, you know, definitely suicide. You know, that one of the precursors to it is depression. And, you know, one of the programs that we are trying to get out into the community, in fact, we trained the entire Park City School District. It was the
staff
middle school.
Yeah, all the secondary schools, Ecker, Treasure Mountain, and the high school.
Yeah, we did that last year, and we trained them in this program that's called QPR. And what QPR stands for is question, persuade, refer. So basically, you're going to question a person about suicide. If you feel like, you know, something isn't quite right with them, then you're going to ask them about that. that. And I think that that's one of the things that's really hard for a lot of individuals is to say that. Are you thinking about harming yourself? Are you thinking about killing yourself? And then what the P stands for, persuade, you are going to try to persuade the person to get some help. And if you can't get them to get help themselves, you know, probably the best way is for you to actually take them someplace where they can get help. And then the R stands for refer the person to resources. Because just like, you know, CPR is a first response means to help save a life until professional help can get there. And that is the same philosophy with QPR. We're not there to diagnose or treat the person. We don't have to, you know, be a counselor or anything like that. But we just want to keep them alive, give them hope, and then get them the help that they need, the professional help that they do need. And we are just looking for opportunities to be able to provide that training for, you know, people in the community. I'm willing to do it. If we have, you know, five people, I'm willing to do it. And it only takes about 1 hour to for the training to be complete. And by the time they're done, they will be able to look at the myths and the facts of suicide, and then also they will be able to see the warning signs, and then also the resources. There is a suicide hotline, and it is 1-800-SUICIDE, and then there's another one that's 1-800-273-TALK. So if anybody's interested in, you know, having a training, organizing one themselves, or if they want to jump on board with somebody else's request for a training, they can just call Valley Behavioral Health and, you know, ask for Kathy Day, and I'll be able to help them.
All right. So is it something that strangers can get together to do?
Oh, yes.
Or is it, yeah.
Okay. Yes. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. And then, Sam, what's the situation at the high school? I mean, are there other kids that don't want to live?
Absolutely. I'm talking with kids about mental health on a daily basis in my job at the high school. I think it's a really important piece of education we have to provide all of our young people, because if you look over a lifetime, 1 in 4 people will suffer from some form of mental illness. That's all of us, 1 in 4. That's one person in each of our families. So I see my job as an educator to promote mental wellness, but to teach them about the warning signs of depression, anxiety, and of suicide. I go into the health classes and teach curriculum. And this last year, as part of a legislative mandate, we did train all 7th through 12th graders in a suicide prevention program so they can recognize the warning signs in their friends. So it is a huge issue that I deal with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're talking emotional, mental health here. I mean, is bullying, though, a cause of problems in the high school specifically?
You know, I think bullying is around like it's always been. I don't think it's any different than it's ever been. I think we have a unique challenge with social media these days. As far as whether it's a cause of suicide, I'm not so sure. Going back to, I think there's a high correlation with having mental health issues. If you're having mental health issues and you happen to be the victim of bullying, that could definitely be an increased risk and in some increased warning signs there.
So talk a little bit about this positive community project within the schools.
Yeah, so as a new coalition, we were coming up upon the summertime and really hoping to get some positive summer messaging out. So the coalition tasked me with finding a way to get a good positive message about mental health out over the summer. So I asked the Latinos in Action class at the high school, taught by Anna Williams, to come up with a safe summer message regarding suicide. So I gave the class some resources to look at to get them inspired. And one student said, hey, why don't we recognize Robbie Borders, one of our graduating seniors, who's been out on the 224 in all kinds of weather holding up a sign, smile, you are beautiful. He says he was doing that, you know, project just on his own. He had lost a friend to suicide last year and had talked openly about being the victim of bullying in his own life. So the students were inspired by Robbie and wanted to recognize him. So the group of students came up with the idea to put together a dog tag necklace that said SYAB, Smile, You Are Beautiful, with the 1-800-273-TALK suicide prevention hotline. So we had our annual recognition assembly at the high school, and the students from LIA, the Latinas in Action class, brought signs and held them up to Robbie as we honored him at our assembly with hopeful, positive messages. And then at the end, we were able to hand out the dog tag necklaces to all of our students. So we tasked them to take the dog tag necklaces, take pictures with them of things that are meaningful to them in their lives, and then post them to social media with the hashtag worth living for. So it was fun to see the high schoolers get into it. And I saw them out in the cafeteria taking pictures with their friends and going out on hikes and taking pictures. So that was really fun to watch.
So what's the stigma, and either anyone can answer this, so the stigma of mental health? I mean, nobody thinks twice about if somebody, you know, says they've got diabetes. But if somebody says they've got some mental health problems, I mean, it's all of a sudden a whole nother world. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, some people think if they have mental health issues that they're crazy. You know, and kind of that stigma that if there's if you've got some disorder in your mind, that you are really, you know, like I said, just crazy. And we need to really break down that stigma. And I think we've come a long way. You know, I think people are a lot more open to recognize, you know, depression and anxiety. But it's just the stigma that's been out there for years and years. And we've come, you know, a ways, but we still have a ways to go. And we need to recognize, just like you mentioned, that mental health issues are no different than having diabetes or, you know, other health disorders.
Yeah. Any other?
I agree. I think it's a lack of understanding about it, because oftentimes I will make a call home to a parent and explain symptoms that their child is experiencing or sharing with me. And there's a lack of understanding that sometimes we as people think, well, we'll get it together. You should get yourself happy. You should get more involved. That there is somehow a way the person can solve the depression without getting help, that it's a choice that they're making versus an illness or a disease like cancer or diabetes. So I just think it's that lack of understanding that it is a true medical problem that requires treatment.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Jerry, you talked about, you know, it being preventable. But I mean, a couple of my friends who have taken their lives, I mean, it's been a medical issue in terms of, you know, they've changed prescriptions or something, and it's just not right. And I don't know, it just takes them, off the, you know, the end. I don't know how, I mean, they're in counseling and they're taking medication, and yet it's still, you know, we couldn't stop it.
Well, and that's the tragedy of it. And I think as more of us become aware and are able to make a better support group around these individuals, and not laying blame on anyone else, but as we all learn and understand what this really is and how we all have a key role in this process, we're all a co-worker, we're family members, we're a support group that can gather around people and just keep them going one more day till they can get over those difficult times. And like you say, maybe find the right formula with their doctors or with their counseling that's going to get them there. And it is. It's just us continually working.
Yeah, not giving up. Again, if people are interested in the training, Kathy, how do they reach them?
They can just call Valley Behavioral Health. I'll give them my direct number, and they can call and just leave a message. It is 435-575-1206, and we would just love to do it. We're just looking for any opportunity we can to train, you know, individuals. You know, our goal would be to have everybody in the community trained, and, you know, it's just 1 hour, and it's amazing how much information we can pack in that 1 hour and get them trained so they would be able to help with this problem.
All right. Anything else?
The benefit of this training, like Kathy is saying, is it's just helping us get over those misunderstandings, and it gives you that power then as an individual to be more open and listening to people.
All right, Jerry, Kathy, Sam, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:34. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow. Starting at 3 o'clock, they'll be meeting at the Sheldon Richens Building. On the phone with me to review the agenda, I have Summit County Assistant Manager Anita Lewis, as well as Planning Administrator Peter Barnes. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with you, Anita. Let's see. Council is scheduled to approve the recommendations for funding the recreation and restaurant tax grants. Any new information since those grants were presented last week?
No, there has not been new information, and I have not heard anything from the applicants other than what was said last week in the open meeting. Unless the councils had, you know, received individual calls, I haven't heard anything. So I expect the council will approve as presented.
All right. Let's see. Also, discussion and public input with regard to the Mountain Accord designation of public lands. Is this the proposal about the 600 acres of Forest Service land in Summit County, kind of along the ridgeline there?
Yes, it is along the ridgeline. It's 967 acres, and the Mountain Accord Executive Board created the Federal Designated Task Force to recommend a federal land designation. And so the intent is to preserve the lands for their current use and management and to ensure that developments such as ski lifts, buildings, and pavement would not be allowed in the future.
So I didn't see a staff report in the packet. I mean, what is it that you want? What does the council want to hear about this from the public?
Well, it's going to be, there will be information that will be posted today. I think they want to talk about the three designated alternatives that are being considered. One is the National Monument Conservation Management Area, and then Conservation Recreation Management Area. So I believe they would like to discuss the recommendations or their alternatives. Plus, they'd also like to hear from the ski resorts and other interested entities, hear their viewpoints and what they feel would be a better designation.
Yeah, well, we heard from Bill Rock, who appeared before the Park City Council, pretty concerned that he was just hearing about it. I think they had plans to build chairlifts in the area, so I guess that would be a good time to bring it up, huh?
Yes, it would be. We've allowed 90 minutes, so it would be a great time to address those concerns to the county council.
All right, let's turn to you, Peter. There's a public hearing at 6 o'clock, and this is going to be on the second phase of the Snyderville Basin General Plan. Is it just a public hearing, or are they scheduled to take action?
Action is always possible. Staff are actually recommending that we take action and approve the plan. It's actually the third public hearing, but obviously the results, whether or not they take action, modify the plan, or send it back, would actually be primarily dependent at this stage on any new information coming from the public. So we definitely invite the public to attend and express any concerns they have.
So we started with saying no new entitlements beyond base zoning until existing approvals are significantly exhausted. And that was like it. It was like that sentence. Now we're presenting some new language. Among other things, it says that new entitlements could be created if it's allowed under the development code, if it's analyzed to show that it has a compelling community need or public interest, or you can amend the development code if it implements general plan objectives. So have we just opened it up again?
That's definitely a fear that's come out among certain sections of the population. I think what we have to realize is that language is important to everybody, and I'm very conscious of that fact because I always express myself as being English. We are two people separated by a common language. So when we promoted the first, this is known as Policy 2.3, the language in 2.3, which said no new entitlements above and beyond the existing entitlements within the code, we as staff were fairly clear what that meant. We were actually clear what that meant. You read it in conjunction with the rest of the policies and documentation in the general plan, and the intent is we're not taking anything away. We are recognizing the pressures from development that we have right now, the existing entitlements, the potential traffic concerns, et cetera. We were looking for a breathing space that suspended an increase in development. That was never a moratorium. That was not what was intended. We went through many, many stages through the Planning Commission and the public input was, shall we say, wide and varied, but definitely a concern about development as a whole. We thought Policy 2.3, as we originally wrote it, was well written and expressed the intent. At the first council public hearing, various members of the development community stood up and suggested that the language could be misinterpreted in our opinion, or reinterpreted in their opinion, to actually prevent beneficial development from taking place. And the examples they were using were transportation options or affordable housing. Council recognized that concern and chose to dial back on some of the language. So in order to protect us from the pressure of development, what we're actually trying to do and said, yes, if a good idea comes forward, if an exceptional proposal comes forward that is of benefit to the community, it would be foolish of us to tie ourselves in knots, paint ourselves into a corner over language that prevents us from addressing and studying those proposals. So they wanted to step back a little from what could be seen as the hard and fast rules in the original written 2.3, and then use the modified language with sufficient tests and analyses required to actually demonstrate the community benefits and mitigate any concerns in order to allow those potential developments to take place.
So why not?
It's really just a moderating of the language.
But why not just be very specific about that, affordable housing and transportation modes? Because every developer thinks his or her project satisfies a compelling public need.
I have not met a developer yet who doesn't believe that. You're absolutely right, Leslie. But the disagreement, I think, or the disappointment that staff had with the first time that this came before council and the examples that we use on affordable housing is that the way the current general plan is written, the way the current code is written, affordable housing units, there's a requirement to provide affordable housing. If a developer seeks to provide over and above that is the minimum requirement, that does not count against density. You are actually allowed to provide affordable housing under the current code. I think the intent of the council, and I don't want to express an opinion that is wrong, so I'm sure they're going to dial in and correct me otherwise, but the intent of the council was not to restrict us in a way that some imaginative development might come forward with an idea that we have not yet had. One of the difficulties in planning is planning for a future that you believe you know of, but essentially we can't imagine every possibility that's going to come forward. So in order to give us a little bit of flexibility in space, they were actually suggesting we just back off a little on the language and put sufficient tests in there to reassure the people that we wouldn't be increasing density over the carrying capacity of the land.
So does staff have a preference between the original Policy 2.3, the language that was proposed by Pat Putt a couple of weeks ago, and what's in the proposal now?
Staff were very happy with the original 2.3 language, and we believe with the tests in the public hearings that we had, we understood its intent and believed we could apply it appropriately. The concern and the natural concern and understandable concern from someone with an alternative point of view is that it might be interpreted to mean something else. And if two reasonable people can disagree over the intent of the language, then it's our duty to clarify exactly what we mean. Whatever the final language that goes into the code, the public hearing is a vital part of that process to make sure that everybody actually understands the intent of our objective.
Have you heard from the Jeremy Ranch Owners Association? They've reportedly sent a letter to residents saying that the new wording in 2.3 would stipulate new entitlements can be built if, quote, needed or desired.
We have absolutely heard from the Jeremy Ranch residents. They were actually extremely vocal during the planning commission part of the process. And I understand that there's been a response to council's action in what I'll say dialing back on 2.3. I think that their concern is somewhat fueled by some rumor. There's been a suggestion that the reason that the council wanted to modify the language in 2.3 was to allow a particular development to move forward with increased density. That is absolutely not the case. That's categorically not the case. The The development in question over at Jeremy Ranch is actually subject to a completely separate legal agreement between the developer and the county, and that would have to be opened up in all sorts of channels before it even became a land use issue. That's not happened. We're not aware of it happening in any imminent future. We're not aware that that would be received particularly well by council right now. So we don't see that as the urgent concern that the Jeremy Ranch residents do. But obviously, we haven't actually been able to get into a public forum yet, and hopefully we'll do that on Wednesday where we can actually reassure them of their concern.
So it sounds like the county council is dialing back because some legal challenges. Is that fair to say?
I would refer to the legal department on any legal challenge, but having worked on, shall we say, the opposite side of the table from a developer's perspective and, you know, my time as an architect, there is potential where you see hard and fast language how it would be applied and how it would be applied by people in the future when, for say, some fortuitous reason, Pat Putt wins the lottery and runs away to an island on the west of Scotland, then who will his successor actually apply this code in the same way that it was meant to be written? And if we are failing in appropriately expressing what we mean by the language, then obviously we need to expand upon that and express it more clearly.
All right, that public hearing, 6 o'clock at the Rich and Services Building. I didn't notice you, but I did see Assistant City County Manager Anita Lewis, the Economic Development Director, and County Manager Tom Fisher at last night's Growth Forum. Were you there as well?
I was not. I would have liked to have been there, but I had other commitments. I'm very interested to find out what was actually discussed, why, how, and how it would affect the rest of us.
Yeah, and Anita, any comments from what you heard last night?
Oh, I thought it was a great presentation, and I think the information presented will be good information that will give the county council and probably city council good discussion points as they continue to plan into the future.
Okay, need to leave it at that. Peter and Anita, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47, and in the studio with me from Recycle Utah, Executive Director Inza Reben. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see. Coming up this week, you've got the Healthy Garden Tour. Tell us about that.
Yes, indeed. So last weekend, we had the native plant sale. We sold out the plant material by 10:30, even though we're supposed to go until noon. So the word is out that natives save water. And in order to show you how some of those private gardens look like, we have a healthy garden tour coming up this Saturday. It goes from 10 to 2. You can only get the maps and information to the gardens by coming to Recycle Utah Center on Woodbine Way, starting at about 9:30, not before, because these are private gardens and they are all over the place, from Prospector to Pinebrook to Jeremy Ranch to Hidden Cove, all over the place. We are including a couple of drive-by gardens as well, and it's to show you that natives do grow in Summit County, and you really don't need to waste water for your landscape.
Is there a cost, a donation?
We would ask for a donation, yes.
Okay. And then you're also going to be part of the SUP Festival?
Yes, indeed. They have decided that's the stand-up paddleboarding festival that's going on Saturday and Sunday, and they decided to support the green things we do, which is quite wonderful. So thank you to the organizers for having us. Of course, as they like to say, there is absolutely no fun to be had outdoors without water. They rely on that. We want to conserve as much as possible so that you can have fun and do the paddleboarding thing. And then, of course, we're also part of the Summit County Power Works event. On the 20th, we have been collecting bulbs galore. Mary Krista is coming today, picking up 3 cartons of those incandescents, which, by the way, are garbage after their useful life. So we still want you to switch bulbs and bring us the CFLs.
Okay. And we've got dumpster days, and this is just a once-a-month deal. So
this is a once-a-month deal. And again, those of us that have lived here for a long time know that we used to have the May dumpsters in town and throughout some of the communities in Summit County. We are continuing dumpster days on every last Friday and Saturday of the month, 9 to 4 only. And it is those bins are attended so that we can sort out the metal and the plastic, and but especially the electronic waste and the hazardous waste. So again, it's a service brought to you by the city, and we can all benefit from that.
Okay. Tell us about the glass collection expansion.
Very, very exciting. We have been trying to deal with contamination in our curbside bins for quite some time, ever since they've been put out. Glass contamination is tragic, really, because it does contaminate all the other, the paper, the metal, everything you put in there. So we need to give you an opportunity to do better. And we have four designated locations where we're going to be putting out bins that are actually color-coded. One is green for, guess what? Green glass. And the other one is brown for brown glass. And by helping us sort out things such as glass and plastic bags, you make it easier for the materials that should be in there, the remaining plastic, metal, and paper goods, to actually be recycled.
So this is going to be at the center or somewhere else?
They will be in the Summit County area, so they will be... they haven't been placed yet, so let me come back next week and tell you exactly where they are. But it's very exciting. They should be in areas that are easy to get to.
Great. And then coming up next month, but before we see you again, a special screening through Sundance. They're outdoor screening, but it's celebrating Recycle Utah's 25 years.
Yes, we are 25 years old, and we intend to have some fun this year. So the first way to do that is to... be part of the Sundance screening of Racing Extinction. Those of you who have seen the trailer or actually the movie, the documentary, during Sundance know that this is a huge water conservation message. We need our oceans. We need our water sources to be clean because we simply need them. It's all part of what makes us be able to live on this planet. So the date is July the 10th. It is a free Sundance screening. And it will be our birthday celebration. And through some magic, there will be birthday cake served to all 250 of you coming. How? I don't know quite sure, but it will be there. So we really want you to show up for that movie. It is a very strong message with a very cool car that's involved in that. And of course, doing the fun thing, on July the 17th, we are working on Uncorked Again. That is our glass collection fundraiser. That will be a concert at the center in our parking lot starting at 5 o'clock. There's a $5 entry, $5 drinks, and $5 food. And we're going to stick with that. Our band will be the Darren Kane Hellhound Express. It's sort of folk, sort of rock and roll, and should be great fun.
Okay, great. We'll see you next month, and so thanks.
Thank you.
Well, Mountainlands Community Housing Trust celebrating the 50th anniversary of the nationwide mutual self-help housing program with an open house this week. In the studio with me, the director of Mountainlands Community Housing Trust, Scott Loomis, as well as one of those who has benefited from the program, Erin O'Keefe. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So we'll start with you, Scott. When and where's the open house?
Yeah, and actually they're celebrating the 50th year as well as the 50,000th home in this program. And we are having an open house this Thursday at 4 o'clock out in River Bluff Subdivision in Francis. And we've got seven homes we just completed. And we plan on having a tour through about five of those homes and, you know, a little celebration for the people that are going to get their keys that day.
All right. So out of the 50,000, how many have we done here in Summit County?
This will be our 97th home under this program that we've completed. We've completed 172 homes altogether. And we've got another group that's going to start very soon, and that'll be five people in that group. And then we're recruiting for another group that's going to come right after that. So Erin is going to be in the group that is starting very soon.
All right. So how does the self-help program work, Erin?
So the self-help program, your sweat equity is the down payment for the house. And we're required to put 30 hours in a week, and 15 of those hours can be volunteer hours. But it's a great program, and Mountainlands Community Housing Trust has done such a great job organizing it and helping us have this great opportunity.
Yeah. So you are in, you'll start building when?
We're scheduled to break down. break ground in July, so we're going to get started here pretty soon.
And then be in the house sometime early next year then? Or?
Yep, it takes about, so the way it works is there's five people in our group, and we build all of our homes together, so nobody can move in until all the homes are completed. So part of the project is making sure that everybody's homes are done. We're scheduled right now to be done hopefully around Christmas is my goal, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So what, do you have a contract, general contractor on site then?
No, we actually have staff that we have three construction supervisors that work with the groups. They teach them all the trades, all the different things that they do, and they're out there working and supervising the whole time. They do about 65% of the labor. And the nice part about the program, too, is it's an opportunity for people to that normally couldn't afford homes of this size. And these homes are 1,800 square feet for a single story, and we have two stories that are 1,500 square feet below and 500 to 700 feet above. So they're nice, substantial homes, and they get a subsidized loan. So they, if somebody that might have qualified for a $180,000 or $90,000 loan can qualify for a $250,000 loan. And then these are market rate homes when they're done. So they can, once they get done, although most people have no interest in selling after all that 1,000 to 1,200 hours of labor, they can sell them and just like any home in the market.
Wow. How does that work for you, though, Erin? I mean, to put in 30 hours a week, you have a full-time job.
Yes, it is a big time commitment, but with the volunteers that we're able to have, it helps cut down that time frame a lot.
I see. So friends, you can recruit friends, and half of that can be...
Yes, yeah. Yep. Okay. So, I mean, if you get enough volunteers, it's really only 15 hours a week, which you can get in the weekend. So, but it's just all about recruiting those friends and family and making sure that you get it done.
Yeah. So what did you have to come up with then in order to participate?
That's the beauty of the program. I basically didn't have to come up with anything. It was $32 for the application. And then, like I said, our hours are going to be taking care of the down payment as the sweat equity. So it's a really wonderful opportunity.
But you did have to go to a bank and get pre-qualified for the loan?
No, these are all USDA Rural Development is a program. So they're the ones that provide the subsidized loan. And they provide funding for us to provide program manager as well as the construction supervisor. So it's that's the program we're celebrating here, Mutual Self-Help, which has been around for 50 years.
Yeah, and pretty impressive then that just the way it works. In terms of, I mean, so how do you get the land then on which to build? And is that part of the cost then that's kind of rolled in?
Yeah, they get a loan. They actually buy the lot from us. We purchase them in blocks because we need a group of lots together. Always very difficult to do, particularly we've been in Camas, Oakley, and now Francis. That's the only place we've had this program because the lots around Park City School District are too expensive. But it's always a struggle, and we've developed several lots, and we've bought them here and bought them there. But it's difficult. But basically we sell them the lot. They get a loan from USDA, and that purchases a lot and provides the for all the materials and labors and cost to build their house.
Yeah, but as anybody knows about real estate, the best thing you can do is start building equity.
Yes,
right? So
absolutely.
Get started.
That's one of the beauties of this program. It gives people that normally couldn't get into a very nice house an opportunity. We get a lot of young families, a lot of single women, single mothers, just people that are interested in being a permanent part of our community.
So in just the last minute here, Scott, I mean, you say you're recruiting for the next group. What do they need to do?
Come into our office or call Becky at 647-9719. She's extension 13, and she'll determine if you're eligible or not. There are some income limits, so you can't make too much money, but you have to make enough to pay for it. So generally in the range of about $30,000 to $60,000 you can qualify.
All right, so how many more of these lots do you have left?
After this group, we have 21 up there, and we're always working on the next groups. And this is a beautiful subdivision, too. These lots are 0.4 to half acres, really, really nice views in a very pleasant area.
Okay, well, congratulations, Erin. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.